Hey, it's Danny Hooper, and welcome everyone to another episode of Events with Benefits. This is your one-stop podcast for everything that has to do with nonprofits and charity organizations looking to increase their profits and to get your stress levels way down. I'm joined here today, as I mentioned, my name is Danny Hooper. I'm a professional fundraising auctioneer. We are today in the offices of Winspire in Orange County, California, and joining us from Winspire is their director of marketing, Ian Loth. Ian?
Thank you, Danny. Yes, my name's Ian Loth. I'm the marketing director.
I just said
here.
What your name was. They know.
Well, I'm reiterating it because it's just so important, right? The fact of the matter is we're thrilled to be here sharing this educational content with you all out there about event fundraising. Today, we have a tremendous guest, Scott Robertson, who is a benefit auctioneer, one of the best, I would say, in the country, that's based out of Florida, Naples, Florida, down in the southeast. And he is well known for doing multi-million dollar events. Consistently, I think he said something about raising upwards of $120 million for nonprofits. So he is very successful at what he does, and he has some tremendous knowledge that he's going to share with us here today. I'm not the only one here in the studio, though. Of course, we are joined, as always, by Renee Zhao from Donation Match. Renee, thanks for coming down.
All the way from San Diego.
Coming up to OC, yeah.
Definitely. And I love hearing what live auctioneers have to say about the events that they conduct, because I think, you know, we all have our own favorites in our local areas, and it's very rare to be able to talk to so many different ones across the country and even the world. So I look forward to being able to hear what Scott has to tell us today.
Good. Well, there are many, many aspects to fundraising events. Not all of them incorporate live auctions. But for those that do, I've always maintained, and I don't want this to sound self-serving, but I've always maintained the most important person in the room once that live auction begins, or the most important person in the room from the moment the door is open, for that matter, is your fundraising auctioneer, because these are people that are specially trained, have a high level of expertise in how to extract the most amount of money possible from that room.
Would you say that benefit auctioneer specialists, right, who are get their BAS designation from the National Auctioneers Association, do they typically do much, pre-event consultation and helping with event planning at all?
I would say, generally speaking, they do. Yeah. Most of them, as a matter of fact, Ian, you and I and Renee were just in San Diego a few months ago for the Benefit Auctioneer Summit, and this is an event that occurs once a year where all the top nonprofit auctioneers from across North America gather to share ideas, and I would bet that 90% of them or more do provide full consultation services to their clients.
Great. Yeah, and my point there being that, the people that that have the most industry knowledge in this space in terms of how to make an event go the best it possibly can would be arguably the benefit auctioneers who go to so many of these. They've seen it all, right? And they've seen the pitfalls, they've seen the successes, and they know, you know, really how to ride that energy. And you know, it could be the difference between an event that raises, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 to an event that raises hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's all about, you know, that expertise and knowing what to do when they're up on the mic.
Well, we have the bird's eye view, for sure. And I always say that a fundraising auctioneer, a true professional, is very much like a quarterback. Once the ball is snapped, there's a lot of dynamics happening on that field, and you never know what is going to happen. And from the door, the moment the door is open at your event until the last guest leaves, there's lots of dynamics shifting around that room. So you need somebody that does have experience and can maintain that overview. I just want to say, before we get into it with Scott, I am just having so much fun working with you folks here at Winspire and Donation Match. You're both very, very successful players out there in the nonprofit space, and I learned a long time ago that the most successful people in any business are always the ones most willing to share their knowledge and information, and we provide this podcast free of charge. Obviously, I hope you'll do some business with us at some point down the road, but that's not necessary. We're just happy to provide this information. It's in everybody's best interest to make sure that this information gets into the hands of the nonprofits and so everybody can benefit from it. And I know the three of us sitting around this studio table here this morning, we all provide a bunch of free information through our websites and businesses. And here's a fella that's joining us now who is going to share his knowledge and expertise.
And I just want to say on that note, if you do like what you hear today or in any of our other episodes, please make sure to go and rate our podcast. If you like it, give us 5 stars. Share it around to all of your friends and constituents, anyone involved in event fundraising so that you can help spread the knowledge.
All right. And let's get onto it right now. Our special guest today from Naples, Florida, Scott Robertson. Well, we're very excited to be joined on today's podcast by one of the top benefit auctioneers in all of North America, Scott Robertson, out of Naples, Florida. Scott, how are you doing?
Doing wonderful, Danny. Thank you for asking. And I have to share, I'm up kind of in your neck of the woods right now. I'm in Whistler in Canada on a little ski vacation with my lovely wife, Mary.
Well, that is a nice thing to be doing in the middle of August. only in Canada, yeah. You say. Scott, we know you're a moving target. You've been busy. We'll get right down to the nuts and bolts of it right now. Maybe you can start by sharing a little bit about your background and a bit about your current business with everyone.
Well, certainly. I've been a professional fundraising auctioneer since way back in 1994. It's been my passion and my vocation for a number of years now, and I truly love the opportunity to help not-for-profit organizations raise the money needed so they can continue their good work and impact the lives of others.
But can't any auctioneer do that?
Well, they can all hope.
<That's a good> Kind of a loaded question, my friend.
Well, it is, isn't it?
You know, maybe we should take a second, just share some of your thoughts about, you know, why it's so important for nonprofits to make sure that they have a professional fundraising auctioneer behind the microphone when the event gets underway.
It's very important to have a quality professional fundraising auctioneer behind the mic, because if they're good, they eat, sleep, and breathe fundraising events. They make it their practice to study events, to study psychology, and do all the things necessary to make that particular event a success.
Well, you and I have talked many times about the three E's of a successful fundraising auction event. That's number one. We need to entertain the audience. You need to keep the audience engaged throughout the event. And finally, the big one is extraction, getting the money out of the room. And that's what we wanted to talk to you about on today's show. Want to take a look at kind of the show flow. We're going to look at from the moment the doors open to the event until the last guest has left in Canada. We say things like that all the time, but we tend to correct ourselves. So from the moment that the doors have opened until the last guest leaves, what needs to be happening during that critical 4 or 5 hour period?
Well, we need to focus on the timeline, and let's call the timeline the show flow, because it truly is. You want to treat your fundraising event like a production. You want to orchestrate the highs and the lows for energy levels within the event. We want to extract the money as early in the event as possible, because there's another E, and that's the E of energy. Too many fundraising events that I see is they wait too long into the event before they start trying to gather money from the folks. And the people get tired, they become unmotivated, and they become unwilling to give as much as they possibly would have had we gotten them when their energy level was higher.
So once the door to the event opens, what's the first technique or what's the first thing we should be doing to get those folks engaged and get them spending money?
So the first thing we want to do is we want to make them feel welcome. The second thing we want to do is we want to get them to that all-important first drink. We want them to have a drink in their hand, because for some reason that's a settling influence on people. Not that they've consumed any alcohol. It's simply that they have a drink in their hand, and now they feel like they're at an event. They're not still getting into the event. Now, One of the things that I find after observing crowds, audiences for years, is I find that the first 15 minutes from the time the person walks into the silent auction area, they get the cocktail in their hand, you really need to give those people 15 minutes to say hello to their friends, to get comfortable with the surroundings, to understand and kind of get a feel for the rhythm of the evening. Then you can expect them to start looking at the silent auction items. But it's going to be 15 minutes before they're going to be looking at silent auction items, give or take a little.
All right. So normal cocktail reception, from your experience, what would we be looking at, an hour and a half before we call the guests to be seated for dinner?
Yes. If it's a pen and paper silent auction, we need to allot an hour and a, probably an hour and a half to that event. If we're using electronic bidding, we can generally shorten that by an hour.
Really? Okay, because reason being they can bid right through dinner, is that what you're thinking?
That's exactly right. They don't have to have as much time because chance, if we're going to have electronic bidding, we're not going to close the electronic bidding down until after the live auction.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on closing the silent auction? Should the silent be closed before or after dinner?
If we're having a pen and paper silent auction, that should be closed before dinner. Before they leave the area, we need to close it down. An advantage to closing it down is there's several reasons to do it, but one of the primary reasons is it helps us to create a bidding frenzy, to get the momentum going, to getting people into the giving spirit. So there's a real advantage to this. There's another advantage to closing it down before dinner, and that's from the development director and event planner's process, is that they can go ahead and input all that data into their computer system, gather up the items, and have them ready for immediate for checkout.
Now, I know you've had experience with both closing the silent pen and paper auction before dinner and after. My experience has been that the event planners will make more money by closing the silent auction after the dinner. We don't have, like up in my neck of the woods, up in Canada, it's not normal practice or considered best practice to close the silent auction early. If the doors to your event are opening at 5:30, for the cocktail reception, not everyone is going to arrive on time. You've said they need about 15 minutes to just schmooze, network before they get focused on the silent. Assuming that not every guest is going to arrive right on time, is there going to be enough time for everybody to participate in the pen and paper silent auction before the dinner and drive the prices up accordingly?
Well, you know, geography has a whole lot to do with traditions and trends. The events that I do, people tend to get tired earlier. We always laugh and say, and if you're in Naples, Florida, that Naples midnight is 9 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Well,
so we have to focus in early as opposed to later. The other thing is that I'm a believer that people need a deadline. They don't need more time.
Okay.
Almost every, when I'm first involved with an organization, it almost never fails. Someone or someones will come running up to me about 15 or 20 minutes before the silent auction is closing, and they'll say, Scott, we've got to delay the silent auction because we don't have enough bids and we need more time. That's when I like to remind them that people need a deadline. They don't need more time. For instance, if you're going Christmas shopping, okay, and let's say if you poll a group of people, have they finished their Christmas shopping on December the 1st, most people would probably say no. If you ask them if they've even started, I would think that it's probably 30 to 50% will say yes, but they're still not quite in the mode. If you ask that question about December the 15th, you'll start getting some frightened looks on their faces because they realize they suddenly have only 10 more days of shopping to do, to buy things for their family and their loved ones. Now, everyone is going to finish Christmas shopping before Christmas Eve. That's just the way it's going to work. So the point I'm trying to make is, and generally speaking, by December the 24th, people don't care what they buy or how much they pay for it. They just have to get the item. That's the same frenzy that we're trying to create with the silent auction.
Okay. Well, you make a good point. Let's move on to the live auction now. And just your general thoughts and kind of an overview of the live auction. What percentage of the crowd can be expected to participate in the live auction? What types of people in the audience are going to engage with us in the live auction? What's your experience?
My experience has been the 80-20 principle. 20% are bidders and 80% are observers. From my experience from being a fundraising auctioneer, you need to realize that 80% of the people may not be participating in the live auction, but by golly, they can participate. So they can cheer on the winning bidders, they can applaud, they can be engaged. And a quality fundraising auctioneer will engage the entire crowd, not just focus on those who are going to bid. Because one of these days, perhaps some of those people that are in the 80%, they're going to be bidders too.
Good point.
Another thought is that to start low enough so that you can engage those people and then ramp up out, you know, ramp up to higher numbers.
All right. Let's talk about when do you think is the ideal time to begin the live auction? Should you wait till after dinner?
Well, it depends upon how many items that you have. If you only have a few items, I'm a pretty big proponent of selling them between the main course and the salad course.
Hmm.
As long as there's a little protein on the salad to keep them calm. But if you only had three items and a special appeal, you could easily do it before dinner because I'm trying to do the fundraising while the people in the room have energy. Now, if they've got above, you know, three to four items, then we need to do it afterwards. And my rule of thumb for starting the live auction is I want as soon as the last entree touches the table, that's when I want to count 120, in other words, 2 minutes, and start the live auction. Hmm. People can multitask. They can eat their food once they've had 2 minutes to dive in. And be engaged. And people appreciate that because it's more efficient use of their time. And remember, the 80% who aren't going to be bidders now have something to do and that they're eating their dinner.
Yeah, exactly. Another good reason to start the live auction during the dinner is if, in fact, the silent auction is a pen and paper auction and has not closed already, you don't have people jumping up and down during the live auction or during their dinner. They're not jumping up and down to run and look at the silent auction. So you've got people seated. They're eating their dinner. They have food in their mouths, tend to be a little quieter. There's less table chatter and a whole lot more attentive. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that, and I use the analogy because I believe it or not, I remember back when I was in the first grade. If you want to quiet a room of first graders down, feed them cupcakes. Now they may be bouncing off the wall as soon as they've all finished their cupcake, but when they're eating their cupcakes, the room suddenly gets quiet.
All right,
and that's also and pause. The other another reason for starting early, in addition to energy, is that if I can start the live auction, if people have a chance to finish their dinner, when they get finished, they're going to stand up, they're going to walk over, they're going to visit with the table, and I no longer have that captive audience that comes with a seated dinner because I've allowed people to get up and move. I want that live auction to start before people have an opportunity to get up and go visit another table.
All right. Now, you said something a few minutes ago. You referenced a special appeal. If we can get you to talk a little bit about that.
So one of the big questions about the special appeal is when do you do it? And I often say, well, I've done it right before the live auction, I've done it in the middle of the live auction, and I've done it at the end, and all of them successful. I find that the trend that I'm seeing more and more, and I'm encouraging more and more, is to do the special appeal before the live auction.
Okay, now, Scott, we'll probably have some listeners here who do not know what we mean when we say special appeal. So can you go ahead and define it for us?
The special appeal is when people, we start at a high number and we go to a low number. And what we're doing is we're asking for direct donations and generally to fund a specific item, such as the new children's playground, the new roof for the church, scholarship for deserving students, that sort of thing.
Okay, so some of our listeners then will know the special appeal as a fund an item or fund a need. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, there's a lot of different names you can call it. You can call it fund a need. You can call it fund an item. You can call it fund a scholarship. You can't call it fund a dream because one of my organizations that I work with actually trademarked fund a dream. But there's lots of different names. The one name that I would encourage you not to use is cash call. It may be a cash call, but it's not a fun friendly term as fund an item might be.
Well, any business owners out there will know that cash call does have a negative connotation. That's when you don't have enough money in the bank to clear payroll, and the principals are called to put in extra cash out of their pockets. That's what a cash call is in the business world.
Absolutely, and we want the cash call to be positive. We want it to be emotional, and we want people to know why we need the money, where the money is going to go, and how it's going to positively impact the lives of others.
What does it take to trigger a successful cash appeal or special appeal?
People need to understand the need, and they need to know how it has impacted generally one person. And what I mean by that is if you have three people that have been helped by an organization and you stand up and you tell all three stories, you just told two too many.
Okay.
Tell one story. Show one, make that one example. Make it concise, make it emotional, make it right, and ask for the money. If you tell three stories, people forget what the first story was. We suddenly are confusing people. And always remember, confused bidders don't buy.
All right. So who should tell that story? You know, obviously we're trying to trigger the attendees emotionally. I think that's the first step in getting a successful special appeal or fund an item or fund a need launched. So how do we trigger them emotionally? Are we expecting a speaker from the stage to do that, or does the MC do that, or do we do that with video? How do we do it?
The answer can be any of the above.
Okay.
A speaker is my preferred method, but we have to take in account who that speaker is and how talented they are as a speaker. Just because someone has a great emotional story doesn't mean that they're going to be able to share it well with the audience. And if they aren't, we shouldn't let them do it.
All right.
One of the ways that we can share an emotional story and keep better control is to use video. And that way we're videoing it beforehand. We've got time to edit. We've got time to make the person look good. We also, and this is going to sound kind of funny maybe, but it also can be filmed in outdoor lighting, because we typically dim the lights in a ballroom,
mm-hmm.
and we want that video to be nice, bright, and light so that it's easy to see.
Right.
Now, if we have neither of those, and we know that videos can be a little expensive, if we have neither of those, then, you know, I've made the pitch before, but generally speaking, if I am as the fundraising auctioneer makes the pitch, I need to be backed up with pictures and slides so that I'm able to trigger the emotion that is needed to be a compelling reason for people to give.
All right. If you're planning a fund a need or a special appeal, how important is it that the attendees have bid paddles or bid card numbers?
Paddles are absolutely imperative to a successful fund a need because, first, it's the emotional factor of reaching down, grabbing that paddle, and holding it up high in the air. The second reason to have bid paddles is so that we can expedite the giving. We don't want the special appeal from start to finish is probably going to take 10 minutes. Now, 10 minutes may not sound like a very long time, but it can be that can be an eternity if you're someone who's sitting in the audience. So we want to be efficient about it. And if people are raising their paddles, the auctioneer identifies them by the number 323. Thank you so much. And they move right along in a steady clip. We're able to extract the money in an efficient factor. You know, we all have sort of short attention spans, so it's important that we be ready and that we be able to recognize those bid paddles as rapidly as possible, but with a steady cadence.
All right. So now some of the pushback we get from clients from time to time, I know you've heard it too, is that clients tend to resist using the bid paddles or bid card numbers because they claim the registration process is cumbersome. How do you get your clients around that?
Yes, and I always have to smile when I hear that. And it's like, so who is this event for? Is this to make it easy for staff, or is this to raise as much money as possible for the organization?
Mm-hmm.
If the organization is organized, has a well thought out plan, it's not that big of a deal.
And of course, it expedites the cash out process at the end of the evening as well, and prevents that any money is going to fall through the cracks. I know I've been involved in funded items or special appeals where people are asked to put their hands up. I've just tried to do it on the honor system, and you'll get 20 people put their hand up and say, I'll make a pledge of $100, but, it, you know, 14 of them show up at the cashier's table on the way out the door at the end of the night.
Absolutely. You're giving them an opportunity for buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
And we don't want that to happen. We absolutely don't want that to happen. There's no reason not to use bid numbers. It's what makes this process work. And simply be organized and make it work. And another line of pushback for bid paddles is, well, we don't want to give them this big, clunky bid paddle that they then have to keep up with for the rest of the night. It doesn't have to be that way. One, you could put it on a piece of paper that can be easily folded and put into a jacket pocket. Or two, and something that I encourage my people to do a lot, you know where what tables the people are going to be seated. Put their name on the paddle. You can use computerized mailing labels to simply stick on the paddle. Put the paddle at the table. Make a big deal about getting people to pass out the paddles. It's not hard to do. It's not cumbersome to do. Their name's on the paddle, and then we're ready to go. But, you know, because it's too cumbersome, it's too cumbersome to pass out bid paddles, I suggest that it's too cumbersome not to pass out bid paddles, because every auction computer software is going to be based upon upon the bid paddle number. And if you're not inputting numbers and you're trying to input names, it really gets cumbersome at that time. Bid paddles will reduce those errors, because when it's all rolling along, you could easily leave significant money on the table. And no one wants that.
So, Scott, if we're planning to incorporate a special appeal at our event, which I think all nonprofits should, because they're fast and a very efficient way of raising extra money very, very quickly, where should we position that special appeal? Should it happen during the live auction, or should that be a separate standalone kind of item?
I consider the special appeal to be part of the live auction. Now, the next question is, where do we place the special appeal within the live auction? I have discovered over time, I used to encourage everyone to put it about 5/8 of the way through the live auction, because the special appeal was going to be the largest item within the live auction, well, at least hopefully. But more and more lately, I find that I'm encouraging people to do the special appeal as the first item of the live auction.
Hmm.
Let that be the first thing out of the gate. Because what I've discovered over time is that people typically attend the fundraising event with two pockets of money. One pocket that they're wanting to give to the charity, and the other pocket is what they're going to bid on trips and experiences within the live auction, so that they can take vacations later. And they're really mutually exclusive. Now, the old way of looking at things is that people say, we want to do the special appeal last, That way, if people don't get an item in the live auction that they were expecting, they'll have money in which to give in the special appeal. Love the theory. However, I find that's not reality. That's not what people do. And I also find that by doing the special appeal first, that it tends to set the tone for the rest of the fundraising event. You know, success breeds success. And this works very well by positioning it first. You know, the old school way of thinking, and Danny, I don't know about you, but I've been at this business for a long time now, and the old school way of thinking is that you would sell a warm-up item, if you will. Something that was undervalued, you know, that's kind of a lower value that everybody might want, and you get it started, and it sells for, let's just say, $1,200. And then the rest of the auction, you have items that sell for $3,000 to $10,000. Well, rather than calling that first item a warm-up item, I call it a set-the-tone item. Mm-hmm. And I would rather sell something of value that has widespread appeal rather than selling something at a low item because I think you set the bar too low. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people often say when they come to an auction that I'm conducting is, well, we know no one's going to get away with anything, any bargains in this auction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've covered appeals, the special appeals. And now what happens?
Now let's go back to
what's that? Go ahead.
Ian's other question was about arranging the auction items.
Right. Let's talk for a second, Scott, about how do we arrange the auction items. We have a list. Let's suppose we have 10 items in the live auction, and how do we sequence that auction? Do we start with our most expensive item first, or should we leave the most expensive item until the very end of the auction?
I'm glad you asked this question because I see a lot of not-for-profits having this issue. What I want to do is the first item is going to set the tone for the auction, so I want it to be an item that has value, and it also has mass appeal that's going to get a lot of different people to raise their bid paddle because it has such good broad appeal.
Okay, can you give us an example?
An example would be, how about box seats in the suite of your favorite sports team? Everybody wants to go. Everybody would be willing to go. The next question is, how much is someone willing to pay in order for that opportunity? And especially if the sports team is winning, the price can just go up, 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 and up, which is wonderful because it's hard to make a perceived value because the value is whatever someone is willing to pay. So that would be an exciting item. It would get people going, and it would certainly set the tone for the rest of the auction.
Okay, suppose you've acquired a big travel package from Winspire, suppose it's an African safari. Big trip, big package. Where would you put that? Would you put that in the middle of the auction, or should that stay till the end? What do you think?
We should put that great Winspire package probably about 5/8 of the way through the auction, where it's very near the center of the auction. We want the auction to be building, building, building. That's the crescendo, and we keep going. If we wait until the end, we've lost some energy in the room, and we've also got people sitting, you know, if they were the contending bidder, the one who got second place, if you will, they may still be sitting on money that they might have purchased. Also, if you have two items essentially going to the same area, or they're similar packages, sell your better package first and your weaker package second.
Hmm.
The reason being is that the people who are interested in the same packages, they're going to buy the highest bidder is going to get the best package. And if you tried to sell the lesser package first, those two bidders were probably going to sit back on their hands and not bid at all because they're holding out for the better package. So we want to sell the better package first. And then if the person who didn't win that package, we want to skip at least one item, let them recover from not winning the item, and then put that pack, and then let them have a chance to buy the lesser package.
All right. Well, that's the one thing that I don't know what your experience has been, Scott, but I really do genuinely love working with a Windspire product, and I found it really doesn't matter where you put their big travel experience packages in the auction, because you can double up or triple up. I just did an auction last week, as a matter of fact, a week ago from today, and they had a Windspire travel package to Tuscany, and we ended up tripling on that, sold that to three different bidders that matched the high bidder's price. So that's a good point that you make. You know, when you're selling what you consider to be your premium package for the night, the person who was the second high bidder, where does he or she go with that money they were prepared to spend? So that's where the consignment packages, travel experiences, tend to work real well. Ian, you've got a thought on that?
Yeah, and I had a question, too, about where to put that top value package, whether it's, you know, a Windspire package or maybe something that you got donated. But, you know, that top tier package, you said put it about 5/8 of the way through the live auction. And you also mentioned that that's probably where the fund a need or special appeal should go. So which comes first, the top tier auction item or the fund a need? Does it depend on the energy level?
Oh, To answer that question, you should sell the top tier live auction item, then go into the special appeal. If you're going to put it in the middle of the the special appeal in the middle of the auction, you should sell your best package, so the numbers are up high in the room. Conduct the special appeal, and then go back and resume the auction. Now, one small item to consider is, let me break this up. Now, and then go on with the rest of the auction. Now, one thing that you may wish to consider is putting a lesser popular item following the special appeal. Sometimes if you've done it right, there's so much emotion going during the special appeal that it takes a little while for people to get regrouped and refocused back into the live auction.
Good point.
And that's another reason I like to do the live auction. I like to do the special appeal first.
Before you even start the live auction?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. One of the other things that, Scott, I know that you see from time to time, I see them fairly frequently up in my neck of the woods, and that's something called the Super Silent Auction. Now, the Super Silent Auction is a standalone section of the silent auction. It's usually a separate dedicated table that's located somewhere in the room. It's well lit, has special signage, and on that super silent auction table we find premium items that would have been good enough to put in the live auction, but Scott, as you know and I know from our experience, nobody likes to sit through 20 or 25 live auction items at an event. You know, I don't know what your recommendation to your clients is. We always say keep it between 8 and 12 items, say 12 as an or 10 as an average, and if you've done a good job of your auction acquisitions and your procurement, you have a lot of premium items, peel those extras off and put them over in the super silent. What are your thoughts on that?
I like it a lot. And the main reason, and the primary reason that I like it so much, is that we're certain not to let these big items get lost in the shuffle within the other, maybe perhaps smaller silent auction items. One thing that I'm a big proponent of is to shut the silent auction down in sections and let the super silent be the last section. The other thing is that since this is the last item, that means it's going to be closest to the ballroom doors, because we're trying to transition people from the back of the room more toward the front of the room, so when the doors open, it'll be exciting, but we've gotten everyone clustered at the front so that they can see these super silent auction items and make them bring the value that they so richly deserve. And this is a great spot to put Windspire items because they have such popularity and they're higher end. They're higher profile of auction items, so that makes them more valuable.
Okay. Scott, you've shared a lot of great, great money-making ideas with us here today and the listeners of our podcast. Of course, our mission is always to get their profits up, get their stress level down, and we really appreciate you sharing time out of your extremely busy auction schedule. You certainly are one of the best in North America, and where can people get a hold of you if they need more information or they'd like to talk to you about your services?
Absolutely. Well, my email address, which is usually the best way to contact me, which is Scott, with two T's, at thevoe.com. And the VOE is the Voice of Experience. So that's T-H-E, V as in voice, O as in of, E of experience.com. And Danny, I must say that I want to give a shout out to our friends at Windspire for really thinking outside the box to put to get information like this to the not-for-profit organizations. You know, this certainly isn't self-serving because they're hitting all aspects of the fundraising events. Plus, they're a quality company that provide great products, and more importantly, they back up what they sell.
You bet. And they're also a great resource center. Windspire has a wonderful website, windspireme.com, and you'll be blown away if you check it out to see all of the great resources they have for non-profit, not-for-profit fundraising event planners. So our guest today is Scott Robertson. Scott, we'll look forward to having you join us on a future episode of our podcast here, Events with Benefits. And I can't thank you enough for your time, my friend.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
This has been another episode of Events with Benefits. Thank you so much for joining us. If you like what you heard on today's episode, please, please rate us wherever you find your podcasts. And be sure to share this with anyone you think it can help. You can find more information about our guest and resources in the show notes at www.eventswithbenefits.com. And please stay tuned for more episodes coming up very, very soon. Thanks all, and we look forward to seeing you next time.